speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome on this Wednesday, February the 13th, 2019. I'm David Knight, your host. A lot of interesting developments overnight. We've had the bipartisan Senate Intelligence Committee has come out, said there is no collusion. We've had El Chapo convicted, and yet there is no end to the drug war. There will be no end to the investigation of President Trump on the Russian red herring either, folks. These things will just continue to go on and on. There'll be no end to the wars that we have in Syria and other countries as well. We're going to take a look at how difficult it is to be green. Just like Kermit said, it ain't easy being green, and it's about to get harder, especially for some of these presidential candidates who've come out and backed Occasional Cortex. Mitch McConnell, and one of the rare glints in his eye that I've ever seen. I mean, Mitch McConnell is usually this blank stare of a tortoise. And he actually got a little bit of a glint in his eyes. I think we're going to put that up for a vote. Let people vote that up and down. You know, you got six people who are senators who have announced that they support the Green Deal. And we're talking about how that is absolutely unsustainable in a number of ways. One way that you haven't heard yet, one way that I haven't really even pointed out, although I've talked about it being a cause for our remaining in Afghanistan for a very long time. I'll bring that up later. We're going to also be talking about the wall again and the bipartisan stonewalling there. President Trump said that he's going to get the $23 billion for border security from other sources. And some people are suggesting, will he get it from El Chapo? You know, he could basically pull in HSBC, the Hong Kong Shanghai Bank, which has had its origins in the opium wars. They've always been part of the drug war. And on the wrong side, I would point out, HSBC has been caught multiple times. It is the bank of which it was said they are too big to jail. Not just the people who hoodwinked the world with the collateralized loans and caused a real estate pump and dump. No, those people should go to jail as well, just as Salvini in Italy yesterday said, I don't think that we need to have the Italian central bank, quote unquote, owning gold. It doesn't belong to them. And I don't think that we're going to fix this by putting a couple of different people in charge. I think we need to end that thing and take the gold away from them, take their power away from them. But no, when I'm talking about these people who are too big to jail, I'm talking about HSBC because they've got friends in high places. Before James Comey became director of the FBI, he was on the board of directors of HSBC as they were laundering money for, wait for it, El Chapo. You see, James Comey has very, very close ties to El Chapo, just like Bob Mueller has very, very close ties to Whitey Bulger. And we're not talking about any of this stuff, are we? We're going to have this Russian investigation continue to go, even though we have the bipartisan Senate Intelligence Committee say there is no collusion. President Trump tweeted out, the Senate Intelligence Committee says there is, all uppercase, screaming. Because, you know, the people who watch CNN and MSNBC and the real news is Stephen Colbert and the Jimmys and late night. So you had a shout. You know, this is like, go back to the early days of Saturday Night Live. You got Garrett Morris, news for the hard of hearing. The top news story tonight, and sign language there. It's not sign language, he just shouts. So President Trump is shouting on Twitter, there is no evidence of collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia. We'll play a little bit of that clip. We'll show you the very sad expression of the MSNBC host who just cannot believe that she's hearing this. Well, I know we'll be able to find something, and we'll keep this going, and you have others who are bragging about the fact that these guys have indicted Russians. They might as well indict Martians.
In a world of deceit, Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Welcome on this Wednesday, February the 13th, 2018. A bipartisan Senate Intelligence Committee has found, about a year after the House found the same thing. How many years has this been going? Let's see, is it 2, 3 years? I don't know. Started it about halfway through 2016 as a way to cover up what whistleblowers inside the DNC revealed about the corruption in the DNC with Hillary Clinton and others who conspired to rig the election, the primary, against Bernie Sanders. Oh, don't look at that. Who was it that released that? It must have been the Russians. It wasn't Seth Rich. It wasn't any whistleblower inside there. Don't listen to WikiLeaks, who've never lied to us. Don't listen to them. They said it was somebody had handed them this information. Oh, no, it must have been Russia that hacked into the DNC. And let's have an investigation of that so that nobody looks at what was actually revealed about Hillary Clinton. And so as we've gone on for years and years with this masquerade, this red herring, that's exactly what it is. I think that's the best way to describe this. Instead of Russia Gate or any of this other stuff, it is a red herring. I mean, think about that. You know, that is a beautiful metaphor, that expression, because it goes back to fox hunting and the anti-hunting activists of the UK. And in order to keep the hounds and the aristocrats riding on their horses from being able to catch the fox, as the fox would go running by, you had all these activists that were hiding in the woods with stinky, smelly fish, red herrings. The fox would run by and they'd run out and they'd, you know, drag the stinky fish across the trail. So when the hounds would come, they lost the track. That's basically what Hillary Clinton did. Russiagate was a red herring. And now, nearly a year after the House reached the same conclusion, the Senate has produced their report. Richard Burr, chairman of the committee, but it is a bipartisan report, bipartisan Senate Intelligence Committee, said if we write a report based upon the facts that we have, then we don't have anything that would suggest that there was collusion by the Trump campaign in Russia. And as they point out, he was careful to note that more facts may be yet uncovered because they're never going to stop looking. They may not have a trail, but those, just like the hounds, they're going to keep braying. You know, the Democrats are going to keep howling and sniffing all over the ground looking for something. And coming after people for process crimes. I saw one news outlet brag, well, you know, they have been able to indict several people who are close to President Trump. Over what? Over what? Over the fact that Roger Stone contacted other reporters and said, we need to talk to Julian Assange. And didn't even talk to him. Didn't even get through. And then he gave us a different version of that. Like I said, it's like the party game. We sit in a circle. And one person whispers something to the person to their left, and then it keeps going all the way around, and they see how, as you transfer that from one person to the other person to the other person, and then it gets totally transferred. Well, you know, if that happens and the FBI is sitting there at the end, then they would send all those people in that circle to jail. You lie, even if it's not material, even if there's no crime, you lied to the FBI. Now, of course, the FBI can lie and does lie to people all the time about everything and things that are substantial and material. That's why I call them the FIB. They've been the FIB since they were created by J. Edgar Hoover. And they've been opposed to our liberties and the Bill of Rights ever since they were created by J. Edgar Hoover. It's a corrupt organization. Every president has said it. Nixon said it. Truman said it. It's a bipartisan assessment. Yeah, he's got blackmail files on everybody. We had Deep Throat was the number two at the FBI. Eventually said he was Deep Throat and proud of it. Proud of it. They don't care about the rule of law. They don't care about elections. They'll run coups. They'll stage false flags. Get whatever they want. And so they said, Burr went on to say, we know we're getting to the bottom of the barrel because there's not new questions that we're searching for answers. but they will continue to go on. I want you to take a look at the MSNBC host as they are going back and forth. She's talking to Ken Delanian, and she is just incredulous that they're not going to keep going and cannot believe her ears that we're not going to get Trump. Yeah. Here's the, we said yet again, there is no collusion. There is no crime. And there is no accountability to Mueller. There is no end to this. He will continue to do, there is no justice. That's the big thing here. There is no justice in the Justice Department. And the Defense Department will not defend our borders. But here's the MSNBC as the news is broken to the anchor.
You know, they are nearing the end of their fact-gathering process. Richard Burr said that publicly. My sources are confirming there aren't that many witnesses left to interview for Senate investigators. But after they conclude that, then they're going to sit down and write their report. And by the way, the Democrats say this report will not be good for Donald Trump. It will question the judgment of many people in the Trump orbit for having these meetings, for essentially allowing themselves to be preyed upon by a Russian intelligence operation that sought to interfere in the election and to help Donald Trump. But again, no direct proof of a conspiracy. As one Democratic aide said to me, we never thought we were going to find a contract between saying, hey, let's call.
Pause that a second. Now, nobody was preyed upon. They didn't get anything. As a matter of fact, as we pointed out over and over again, the praying, as in P-R-E-Y, because Democrats don't pray, the praying was done by the DNC and people like Chalupa, who are working in the Ukraine, to set this up. It was a bunch of lies, false dossiers, and traps that they didn't fall for. And then following up on that, process crimes. But let's continue on. Just take a look if you're watching this clip. Take a look at the expression of the anchor there. I think her name is Hallie Jackson. Let's continue on that clip.
But the question is, how do we interpret all these various contacts between Trump campaign and Russia?
Not to put too fine a point on it, but I want to make sure I'm understanding this because you are sharing this
all of us. Repeat this again
here,
for her.
And then I'll get Nancy and Shauna to react to this. But if and when the president, as he may inevitably do, point to this reporting, point to these conclusions and say, look, the Senate Intelligence Committee found that I am not guilty of conspiracy, he would be correct
collusion.
In saying that?
It's actually collusion.
Well, except
so did the House.
Use of the term not guilty is not really appropriate because they're not a court of law, and Robert Mueller still has yet to weigh in, right?
And we don't have any
Robert Mueller knows things
legal procedures
that the
happening
investigators
here.
Do not have access to. That said, Trump will claim vindication through this, and he will be partially right because Senate investigators have access to highly classified intelligence. So, for example, if there was an intercept between some Russian intelligence officers suggesting that they were conspiring with the Trump campaign, they would see that. That has not emerged. So that evidence, it does not exist, and Trump will claim vindication. But Trump has set the bar so high, essentially, if he's not convicted in a court of law of conspiring, in his mind, he's innocent. That's not how many senators of both parties see it, Hallie.
No, that's not how MSNBC sees it. Let's back this up and explain it to Hallie. Let's make this very clear. Okay, as he pointed out, this is not a finding of not guilty because it's not a trial. It is also, Hallie, not an indictment because, Hallie, there is no collusion. There's no collusion. There's no crime. No crime, no indictment. No indictment, no trial. No trial, no verdict of not guilty. But it all begins with the fact they found there was no crime, no collusion. But that's not going to stop MSNBC or CNN or the Democrats or Adam Schiff or any of these people. They're going to continue with the red herring. Now, when we come back, we're going to take a look at what's going on with the wall. You know, all of this fighting back and forth with the wall. As I pointed out before, what President Trump was asking for was 0.125% of what they're going to spend this year. And then they gave him 0.25% of that. Okay, as part of the, we're bending over this. You know what nobody is having a problem with in terms of money? They're not having a problem with the $22 trillion debt. That's at the top of the Drudge Report, $22 trillion in debt. Oh, but they can't find $1 billion. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Taking my time,
back. Now, the bipartisan stonewalling, that's the only kind of wall you're going to get out of Congress. And it is bipartisan, folks. Let's understand that the Republican leadership of Mitch McConnell saved the bacon of the Democrats. People were fed up with him. They could see, as Nancy Pelosi was standing there petulantly saying that she wasn't going to give him 1 cent for a wall, and she did that little thing with her hands, you know, the dais there behind him. You know, mocking him. Oh, good for you. Good for you. I'm not giving you any money. I'm not giving you any crumbs. And I'm going to fight the people for the crumbs on their kitchen table in terms of tax returns, tax cuts. But people were getting fed up with the obvious obstruction of Nancy Pelosi. So Mitch McConnell comes in and bails him out. And says, we've agreed in principle. We will get some money from them. You know, 1/4 of what we were asking before. And as I said, you know, with the $5 billion or so, actually almost six, 5.7. Let's just call it five. Makes it easier to do it. Do the math. That is 1/8 of 1% of what the federal government is spending. And they shut the government down for the longest period of time they've ever shut it down. Over 1/8 of 1%, because it is the principle, folks. It is the principle. And they haven't agreed, really, to build the wall in principle. Because you can say, well, we're going to build some kind of an obstruction. But you're not going to do it in concrete. You're not going to do it this way. You're not going to do it. And we have a limit to the number of people that you can house, which means that you're just going to have to release them. I don't know how many people they've already got, that they've already put in these particular places. You know, I say, we're going to limit it to 40,000. Well, do they already have 40,000? Do they have 39,999? So the next person gets a get-out-of-jail-free for breaking the law. You break the law when you come across the border illegally. Except with the Democrats and with the establishment Republicans like Mitch McConnell, who are doing this for their corporate donors. And of course, the Democrats have corporate donors who want to have this happening as well. But they also want the voters, because that's their future, their party. And so they will pretend that somehow, by jumping the border, by violating the law, that gives you now protected legal status. That's what our court system says. You come here and you violate the laws here in America, and we will give you protected status. You now become a refugee. You're not an illegal alien, which means that you criminally trespassed and you are a foreign citizen. That's what alien means. It means you're a foreign citizen. And illegal means that you criminally trespass. You didn't come here legally. You didn't follow the procedures like legal immigrants do. You come into this country and you begin by disrespecting the system. You know, when they got amnesty from Reagan back in 1986, we've been down this road before. Oh, give everybody amnesty and then we'll do border security as well. Well, they get the amnesty, but we never get the border security. And when they gave amnesty to people, it was only a small fraction of the people who were here illegally that even cared. They don't even care what our laws are. And we start out that way. There's a lot of other laws that they don't care about. Drunk driving laws, for example. Or sexual abuse laws. They found that out here as we got the Sanctuary City Sheriff that got elected here in Austin, in Travis County. Well, I'm not going to turn anybody over to ICE except for three crimes. And then they found this guy that had been involved in a lot of sexual assaults against women and children and so forth. It's like, oh, well, against four crimes. Make it four crimes. It's like, well, what about this other thing, this other thing, this other thing? You start out by scoffing at the border laws, and there's going to be a lot of laws. What we've done is we've shown them that we are pushovers. And if we say that we're going to do a deal with Dreamers in exchange for security, when President Trump throws that out there as a negotiating chip, he is telling everybody in the other countries, I'm a pushover. And that's why we've seen border crossings escalate. Because President Trump, in these so-called negotiations, has told them that he's a pushover. He is telegraphing that to the people in other countries. They watch our news very carefully on these immigration issues. And that's why it's accelerating. Because we're weak on the border. President Trump, you have the authority as president to defend our borders. You have the permission of the Constitution, not just me, and not just the people who voted for you. You not only have the permission, the authority, but you have the duty to defend this border. And you better do it. And you don't need the permission of Nancy Pelosi or every single federal judge in order to do it. Now, hopefully, he's going to take that money from El Chapo, from other places. I think it'll be a big mistake, as they've been floating these ideas. I think it'd be a very, very big mistake for President Trump to take that money from emergency relief. Say, we got an emergency at the border, so we're going to take it away from emergency relief for people who have had floods and so forth, because most people agree that that is something that the federal government should do. I don't. There is no authority for that in the Constitution, but it is a humanitarian thing, and it isn't going to make him popular to take that money and to build a wall. It isn't going to make him popular to take money from military housing for soldiers and their families and build a wall. Now, he may be taking that. It just said military housing. We have been housing all these people coming across the border at military bases, so maybe that's what he's going to do, is take some of that money. But I don't think so, because they're saying we're going to limit the number of beds that you can have there. So I don't think that's where the military housing is coming from. I didn't get any more definition of that. And, of course, that was just what people were saying in the background. Now, there are other places where he said, I'm going to get $23 billion for border security from other sources. And he said, the wall will be built as we speak. Now, he could have done this 2 years ago. He could have taken this money from other sources 2 years ago. Could have taken it before he did a government shutdown. That did not help him. Fortunately, he's had a great couple of weeks, and like 10 days, his popularity went up by 9%, or 9 days it went up by 10%. Or something. A very quick upward turn, because President Trump did a great job with the State of the Union. He talked about liberty versus authoritarian policies of the Green New Deal and socialists. So he talked about liberty versus socialism, austerity, authoritarianism. That's a big win. Americans like that kind of talk. We like liberty. We also like life. And so he talked about the abortion issue as well. And he said he's going to build a wall. Absolutely needs to build a wall. Shouldn't have gone through all these different exercises for this amount of time. And dithered on this, because that was the key issue that got him traction initially, got him elected. And he needs to absolutely deliver on that issue. But where might he get that $23 billion if he can't get it from Chuck and Nancy? Well, he might get it from El Chapo. El Chapo has been convicted. He has $14 billion of assets they have seized. Now, this is not civil asset forfeiture necessarily. He has now been convicted. So I say, if he's been convicted of violating the law, even though I don't agree with the drug war, I'll tell you why in just a moment. I think he's exhibit A as to why the drug war is a failure. But nevertheless, we got a drug war. We had a trial, and he was convicted. And now you can take his $14 billion. And it would not be civil asset forfeiture. Here's the other thing, folks. If they took the $14 billion from the Mexican drug lord, then President Trump could say, Mexico is paying for it. See, I told you Mexico was going to pay for it, one way or the other. Now, when we have the situation of the physical barrier is very important. It is not going to be 100% proof, because we have a push from the drug war and a pull from the welfare state. We'll be right back.
Broadcasting with the power of the First Amendment, it's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. You know, folks, we have an agreement in principle, we are told, by the GOP leadership in the Senate. This agreement in principle to protect the Democrats by Mitch McConnell and the GOP establishment. And it may be an agreement in principle, but it is the devil is in the details. And we're going to take a look at some of those details coming up here. But before we do, let's talk about how President Trump says, well, they may not give me the money, but I'm going to fund that I'm going to get $23 billion anyway for border security from other sources. As we said, well, you know, after they have convicted El Chapo, the U.S. government is currently seeking the criminal forfeiture of more than $14 billion in drug proceeds and illicit profits from El Chapo. So they haven't gotten that money yet. I mean, this is not what they do to poor people when they pull you over and say, well, you know, we suspect that your car might be involved in a drug crime. We're not charging you with anything, and we're not going to wait and find you guilty of anything, because we're not even going to charge you. We're just going to take your car. Oh, and if you want to try to push back on that, you know, the court filing fees for this car that's worth $1,000, the court filing fees are $900. So you probably wouldn't even want to bother with that. And they make a lot of money. That's a racket that's being run by a lot of police departments throughout this country. It's called civil asset forfeiture. They say, well, it's civil. It's not criminal. I'm not charging any humans with crimes. I'm charging inanimate objects with crimes. I'm charging that stack of cash that I found in your pocket. Or I'm charging your car with a crime. Or I'm charging your airplane or the home that you have here with a crime. And there's no presumption of innocence for an inanimate object. And this is something that is coming from a regulatory agency. It isn't a law that's been, you know, done by your elected representatives. And so these are regulations, not laws. And so you don't have any protection against the government. You don't have the assumption of innocence until proven guilty. You don't get the due process. You don't have any protection against excessive fines. So, you know, if they see a marijuana butt on the front porch of your house, regardless of how it got there, they're saying, we're not making any assumptions about how this got here. I don't even care. You know, could it be some bum that's, you know, smoked a joint on your front porch? You don't even know. And the cops come along and see that joint there, what's left of it. Or maybe they drop it and plant it there. And then they say, ah, it looks like your house is guilty of this. As a matter of fact, the prosecutor who was involved in the Boston bombing, her name was Ortiz. She was got to be very famous. They were grooming her for high political office. She was a federal prosecutor in that jurisdiction of Boston. And she went after a motel there. She said, you know, we've had, I forget what it was, three, four people busted over a 15-year period at a hotel for having drugs. And she said, well, you know, I think we need to seize that entire hotel. People said, what? What? How can you justify that? Because the first time you hear about civil asset forfeiture, you cannot believe your ears. She went on to persecute, and I say persecute, not prosecute, persecute Aaron Schwartz to death. And then that kind of ruined her political career. She started to revive it a little bit by taking the lead on the Boston bombing situation, such as it was. But nevertheless, civil asset forfeiture, they just take your stuff. But in the case of El Chapo, he's now been convicted in a trial. And, you know, it'll be appealed because he's got a lot of money. But, you know, whether if they still went through the process here. And there's at least $14 billion, they think, of assets. Now, I wonder where they got that information from. Did they call the executives at HSBC and ask them, how much money has he got in the account? Because when we had these revelations about HSBC, the various things that have happened there, I've spoken a couple of times to Everett Stern. He was a whistleblower against HSBC. HSBC has been convicted twice of money laundering for drug cartels and terrorists. And the Sinaloa cartel that El Chapo ran was one of their biggest customers. As a matter of fact, the Sinaloa cartel, according to Matt Taibbi of Rolling Stone magazine when he did the expose, the Sinaloa cartel had their own checkout window where they could launder cash. They were bringing in such large amounts of cash, HSBC gave them their own personal window. Just bring the wheelbarrows of cash into here, no problem. There's been a documentary done, and again, Everett Stern was one of the key whistleblowers, getting them convicted the second time. The first time it happened, they got a slap on the wrist, nothing much happened to them, and they said, well, you're going to have to set up a system to keep this from continuing to happen. He was brought in as part of that agreement. He didn't have any experience in doing detective work. They wanted to make sure they hired people that didn't have any experience doing detective work. And then they set up search terms to filter things. So they would put the words in for certain locations, certain individuals, other things that they were going to be looking for as they would scan documents and so forth to make sure this wasn't money that was going to cartels or terrorist groups. But then what Everett found as he started looking at this stuff, he was a lot more conscientious than the other people. The other people was like, you know, don't look too hard. You know, guys, just enjoy this. You're going to get a good salary. Just, you know, go through the motions and let's not push this too hard. There's actually a documentary called Dirty Money that also talks about this as well. But what HSBC did that Everett Stern found out about, and again, I've interviewed him a couple of times, but you won't find that on YouTube because they flushed all my interviews down the memory hole. I wonder why. Anyway, without any strikes, I'll add. But what Everett found was that they were putting spaces in between names or putting periods in between names to make sure that the computer didn't get a literal match. That's the way they subverted the system. And they brought in people who, for the most part, were just happy to go through the motions, not Everett. And so they got convicted a second time. And Eric Holder, who it is rumored is going to be running for president, let's hope that he does. It will be very interesting. It'll be a lot of fun to ream him out when he runs for president. But Eric Holder and the Obama Justice Department made the pronouncement, well, there would be no advantage to taking the assets of HSBC and putting them out of business. And so, as Matt Taibbi and others pointed out, they are literally too big to jail. So they got a small slap on the wrist of less than $2 billion fine, which is a teeny, teeny, tiny amount of money that they had made in profit. And, of course, HSBC continues to go. One of the things that helped them, by the way, I'll mention this again. James Comey was on the board of directors of HSBC when this stuff was going on before he was handpicked to be the head of the FBI. So, you know, it kind of helps to have friends in high places. He wasn't the only one that was connected to HSBC, of course. They make sure that they have those kinds of connections. So, you know, I don't know how they're going to be able to get this in, this money, you know, from El Chapo. There was just a Grand Tour episode where the boys, James May, Richard Hammond, what's his name? Drawing a blank here. You know what I'm talking about. The guys that had Top Gear for all those years. They went down to Columbia, and they were on they now have Grand Tour that's been picked up by Amazon. Jeremy Clarkson. So they go to Columbia and they are on kind of a scavenger tour with these junker cars they picked up going through all these different areas of Columbia, jungles and volcanic areas and stuff. And they're supposed to take pictures of the wildlife that's there. And the last wildlife that's on their list are hippos. And they're looking at this and saying, well, hippos are not indigenous to Columbia. And at the very end, they find them at the estate of a former drug lord who has either been put in jail or shot, not clear which, but he is gone, but the hippos remain and are thriving, and you might take those pictures very carefully. They're some of the most dangerous animals anywhere. I think I've heard they kill more people in Africa than any other animal, but maybe the FBI can get some hippos and sell them to some zoos or something, and then build a wall. Wouldn't that be great? But the drug war is going to continue to go on. That's the insanity that we're going to continue with. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You know, in 12 years, there have been over 250,000 murders in Mexico. And that's the government's official story. It's actually much, much higher than that. Because they are having between 30 and 50,000 people a year being killed down there. Acapulco, you can't even go there anymore. I mean, just look at what happened to those crypto libertarians that went down there, the hippies. You know, they said, we're going to, you know, do whatever we want. We're going to go to Acapulco. And then they started growing some pot of their own. And all of a sudden, they got a visit from one of the drug cartels, shot him dead. That happens all the time. Very brutal what's going on there. And, of course, what we see here with El Chapo isn't really going to do anything at all. As a matter of fact, got somebody else has taken his place. El Chapo's been replaced by El Mayo. Nothing changes. Sinaloa cartel keeps going. The Zetas keep going. The MS-13 keeps going. And they keep coming into the United States. You know, we got two issues here at the border. We can put the wall up. and the wall will help. I'm not saying not to do the wall. I'm not saying we don't have a physical barrier. But as long as you have the push from the drug war, just remember that. Drug pushers, yeah, they're pushing this stuff across the border. Why? Because there's a lot of money to be made. And then there's also the pull of the welfare system. So you have that push and that pull, and it creates so much force and pressure that people are going to get across that border illegally by hook or by crook. You have to take away the incentives. You have to de-incentivize it. The UN has incentivized it. You know, the war on drugs, all you conservatives need to understand, the war on drugs is a UN agenda. You like the fact that the UN imposed that agenda on us? You like the fact that they created the schedule of various drugs? You like the fact that they put all those drugs in those schedules? Marijuana is a Schedule One. It's rated higher, I think, than meth. It's absolutely insane the way they schedule the drugs as well. None of it makes any sense. And what it has done, it is giving us a corrupt, lawless society. The corruption and the lawlessness that you see in Mexico, we just had as part of this El Chapo trial, it came out that there were massive amounts of money given to the Mexican president who just stepped down in office. And the corruption is pervasive throughout Mexico, but it's also, folks, pervasive here in America as well. And we have destroyed our system of justice. We've destroyed, as I pointed out before, with things like civil asset forfeiture with mandatory minimums, putting more people in prison than any society in history has ever done. More people, not even in terms of percentage, but in terms of absolute numbers, more people in prison than even communist China put in prison because of our war on drugs, because of the UN war on drugs. It's not our war on drugs. Richard Nixon copied it from the UN, put his name on it, turned in his homework assignment. But it's the UN's war on drugs. They created that in 1961. Richard Nixon plagiarized it, did their bidding in 1971. It has destroyed our individual liberties, the whole concept of due process and individual rights. It has trashed, shredded, and burned the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, corrupted law enforcement, and it has escalated the use of drugs, created more intense forms of these drugs, just as it did during alcohol prohibition. All the same things that we saw during alcohol prohibition, the creation of rival gangs by giving them a monopoly in the black market where they were shooting each other on the streets. We saw all that stuff before. The only difference between alcohol prohibition and this one is that alcohol prohibition was our idea. It was misguided, but it was our idea. It was enacted constitutionally with a constitutional amendment. The 18th Amendment was put in because they understood that because of the 9th Amendment and the 10th Amendment, they didn't have the authority to prohibit alcohol. But we don't care what the Constitution says anymore. That's the sad thing. You know, we have 18th Amendment, then 21st Amendment made it legal again at the federal level, took away that prohibition. But we don't care. We just prohibit everything is now prohibited unless expressly permitted by the DEA or the FDA or essentially the UN. And that's what the sad thing about this really is. Yeah, I don't support drug use. I really don't. I don't use drugs myself. I don't drink. I don't use any recreational drugs whatsoever. I try to stay away from pharmaceuticals especially. But folks, it has an effect on you and I even if we don't use it. And I understand as a Christian that this is a spiritual issue. It's not even, I don't think, a psychological issue. This is a spiritual issue. And the saddest thing about it as a Christian is I've seen the Christians and the church basically become passive and lay down and put their trust in government and not Jesus to change people's lives. And what we have reaped from this is the kind of corruption and destruction and drug addiction in our society that will always happen when we reject the power of God and God in our lives and we turn for secular solutions. Yeah, Washington ain't going to do it. And they've proven that to us over, what is it now, going up to 48 years. Never will learn, will we? And so we take a look at this and we take a look at the wall. I find it absolutely amazing that there is so much of a fight about this little teeny tiny amount of money. President Trump asked for 1/8 of 1% of what they're going to spend. Said, not a penny, not going to give it. Now, Mitch McConnell has said, come, give them a little bit of something or you guys are going to look bad. Don't make us look bad here. Says, all right, we'll give them 1/4 of that. So let's work that out for the MSNBC and CNN anchors and reporters. 1/4 of 1/8 is 1/32nd. That is 1/32nd. Take 1% and cut it into 32 slices and give one of those to President Trump and say, see, here's the money for your wall. Now shut up and sign this bill. And President Trump says he's going to get the money from somewhere else. Let's hope that he does. But think about that. Think about how much money has been fought over 1/32nd of 1% of $4 trillion, and we just went up to $22 trillion in debt. They don't care about that. Have you seen Nancy Pelosi saying, not another penny for this debt. We got to do something. Have you seen any of the Republicans, Mitch McConnell, any of these other people do that? No. No, they don't care. As a matter of fact, Occasional Cortex says, well, yeah, we're going to give everybody free everything except freedom. We'll give you free stuff, no freedom. We'll mandate and rework the economy and centrally plan it from Washington, but no freedom. But free things, everything's going to be free. And we will pay for it by using the Federal Reserve. See, that's the green part of our plan. Shall I have the Federal Reserve print the green stuff for us? Well, it's not. That's not even green, is it? It's red, as in debt. The accounting terms, you know, we've got they've gone into the red. And they've been in the red for quite some time. And it is accelerating. You know, when you look at $22 trillion, you just can't get your head around that. But let's think about that. If we were to overspend our income by $11 billion a year and do that for the last 2,000 years, let's go back to the time of Jesus, okay? And so for all of AD, 2,000 years, we overspend by $11 billion a year. That would get us there. But we didn't, because America hasn't been around for 2,000 years. And if you look at that massive amount of unsustainable debt, it's increased by 10% in just the last 2 years. And as I tweeted out, America is like, bring it on, bring more of it on with the Green New Deal. And I put up a picture of Alfred E. Newman. Like, you know, what, me worry? We're not worried about the debt. Republicans aren't worried about it. Democrats aren't worried about it. It's money we owe to ourselves. That was the lie of John Maynard Keynes. It's a lie they'll teach you in college if you take any economics courses. You know, it's just, it's nonsense. It's nonsense. If you can't budget your bank account, you're gonna go bankrupt. We're going to go bankrupt, and nobody cares. And Barack Obama started us on a very fast trajectory, and it isn't slowing down. We're still increasing at that same rate. And as Michael Peterson, CEO of the Peter Peterson Foundation, nonpartisan organization, looking at our long-term fiscal challenges, said, reaching this unfortunate milestone so rapidly is the latest sign that our fiscal situation is not only unsustainable, but accelerating. You know, we talk about the Green New Deal and say, oh, we're going to make everything sustainable. And we're going to talk about this when we come back. It is absolutely unsustainable. It's unsustainable from a technological standpoint. I'm going to show you how that applies, but it's also unsustainable from a fiscal standpoint. We can't keep doing business like this because it's irrational, totally irrational. All right, stay with us. And folks, take a look at the products that we have at InfoWarsStore.com. We've got some great specials there.
Using free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. You know, we're talking about whether or not we can sustain this path that we're on, this trajectory. We just added, $9.3 trillion during Obama's term. We added another, and that was 8 years. We've added another $2 trillion in the first 2 years of President Trump. So it hasn't increased in terms of the rate of debt that we're piling on, but it hasn't slowed either. And that's no great accomplishment. And we should be concerned about that. But I think this is something that had the side news. I think it was on the Drudge Report. I had it to talk about yesterday. I didn't get to it. But I think this is a perfect analogy for where we are with a lot of these different problems. With the war on drugs, it's uncontrollable. With the open borders, with a national debt that just keeps accelerating. But, of course, we can't find 1/32nd of 1% to spend to correct a real problem. You know, there was a situation in Winnipeg. There was an A&W that was on fire. It was burning to the ground. And yet the customers were lining up to go through the drive-thru. You got fire department there. They had a fire crews. It was so bad that they had to fight the flames from outside of the restaurant. The crews said it was too dangerous, too much heat, too much smoke to go inside. So you got all the fire trucks. You can see the pictures of this stuff. All the fire trucks are there circling around, and the people are just oblivious to that. Maybe they were ordering barbecue. I don't know. But you look at this and you say, what does it take to wake people up? Because the country is burning down to the ground just like this A&W, and people are lining up at the drive-through window wanting their free stuff from occasional Cortex, who happens to still be inside because she can't figure out that she has to get outside. The people are just oblivious to that. They had eight fire trucks. And again, the firefighters would not go inside, and the people are lining up to get their stuff. Had to have that. And we also had the case, I don't think this particular one crashed and burned, but we've had another Tesla crash. Amazing to me how it's no longer news anymore. Because it's kind of hard to get the mainstream media to report this anyway. Because when you start talking about things that don't fit into their nice, neat little package of smart cities and the Agenda 21, or it's now the UN 2030 agenda. You know, that was the other thing that was the big crime of Occasional Cortex. She told everybody where this is going. She was very upfront about it. She's too stupid to realize that people don't want to give up internal combustion engines, and they don't want to give up planes and so forth. But that's already happening in Europe. They've already got across Europe city, one big city after the other, banning internal combustion engines. They began with diesels, and they said now gasoline engines, and they say now hybrid cars, imposing congestion fees for anybody that wants to go into a city. That's why you have the yellow vests out there. It's not just gas taxes. It's not just the speed cameras and lowering the speed limit to 50 miles per hour in every two-lane road in France. But it's also the idea that these people cannot afford and will not be able to, if they go through with these plans, will not be able to commute. See, the big revolution of the middle 20th century was the fact that people could get to the suburbs. They didn't have to live in the city proper in order to work in the city. And we have a big problem with the affordability of housing in cities. Just take a look at San Francisco, for example. The people who are working there in service jobs and other things, that, you know, they're not making the kind of money that Nancy Pelosi or the executives at Google make, or even the engineers at Google make. They can't afford to live there. Well, how are these people going to be able to live there if they got to pay a congestion tax of $16 a day? Because the government won't build infrastructure. They don't want to build infrastructure that you will own. They will build infrastructure that their corporate cronies own, that they control, that they use to tax and track your every move. That's the only infrastructure that they'll build, but they can't even do that.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
All right, welcome back. President Trump said he's not happy with the border wall compromise, but he's also saying, I don't think you're going to see a shutdown. He said, I wouldn't want to go through it. No, don't want to do that again. It wasn't a well-thought-out strategy. It didn't change anything. It cost him in terms of popularity. Fortunately, he's been able to regain that. And I say fortunately because I wish President Trump well. I want to see him succeed because the alternatives are unthinkable and unthinking and authoritarian. He's got the right instincts, but he needs to understand the power that he has and the duty that he has and the fact that he can get this done. And we're going to talk a little bit about the Green Deal and the fact that even the people inside the Democrat Party are pushing back against occasional Cortex. Even people like Gavin Newsom saying, we had this pet project that began with Arnold Schwarzenegger, and then it went to Governor Jerry Brown, and now the new governor, Gavin Newsom, said, let's be real. This thing has ballooned. It's now like triple the cost that they'd originally told everybody it's going to be. Here we are. I mean, we're talking about, Brown's been there maybe two times. I'm not following California politics that closely, but I think he's just served two terms again. And then you had Schwarzenegger. So I don't know how long this has been going on, but it's not close to being finished, and the prices keep escalating. It happens everywhere. It's happening here in Texas. I have seen the government unable to finish any projects on time or on budget, not even anywhere close to on time or on budget. Here in Texas, in Austin, they don't even try to do anything except toll roads, and they can't even get those built. It's pathetic. And so in California, it's like even the governor there just says, well, it ain't going to work. So we're going to get to that in a moment. But when President Trump says he's not happy with it, he doesn't like it, but he's probably going to sign it. Also talking about the China tariff, says if we're close, we're going to let the deadline slide a bit so we can get that deal. You know, President Trump declared an emergency, as I said yesterday, to try to equalize things between the United States and China. They portrayed it as saying he was starting a trade war with China. No, the trade war was started decades ago against us. They've been bombing our industry for a long time with policy. When they charge 10 times the amount on taxes on the same goods that we charge on theirs, that's not anything close to being fair. And so he's trying to just equalize it. It's like, well, we can equalize it at zero, or we can take it up to the level that you're doing it. Either way. And he says it is a national emergency, and that's how he said he was going to put on the tariffs. Well, you know, if we have a national emergency that we need to protect the aluminum and steel industry, what about protecting our jobs in every one of these aspects? What about protecting the American dream? What about protecting our ability to be able to afford a home because we don't have to build schools for every child that comes here from every country that doesn't want to pay for the education of their children? Yeah, let's just send them to America. The poor suckers over there will pay. They'll build the schools. They'll pay for their educations. And the kids can come back home. And, you know, if they want to, they can come back to their home, and start businesses or whatever with the education that they've been provided for free by the American taxpayer, who now can no longer afford to live in a home or an apartment of a reasonable size because of the taxes. That is an emergency. Nobody called President Trump on the fact that he said the aluminum, protecting the aluminum steel industries, is an emergency. I mean, there was a lot of complaints from people in the EU and from China and so forth, but there wasn't anything that a federal judge could do about that to shut that down. That's within his power. It is within his power to declare an emergency. It is within his power to use the military to protect this country. And we have the military being used, as I said yesterday. Look at this. Everybody freaks out if he wants to use the military to protect the border, but they don't care if a president like Obama sends the military to Syria, has them build a dozen military bases, four airfields. They do it very quickly. Nobody appropriates any of the money. Nobody gives them the constitutional authority to launch that war there. No problem. No problem with that. It's absolutely insane what is happening in this country now. And so President Trump says he's probably going to sign it. Now, Mark Meadows of the House Freedom Caucus said, I don't support the immigration deal, but I expect that Trump will sign it. A lot of the people in the House, the Republicans in the House, are very upset because they were not given details. I mean, this is something that's been rammed through by Mitch McConnell. The same people that have been, you know, Mitch McConnell was working with Paul Ryan to obstruct protecting our borders for the longest period of time. And he's doing it again. And he's doing it to protect the Democrats as well. A migrant group of 311 were arrested near El Paso, bringing the total on just Monday to 641 captures. Now, that's not 641 people who crossed the border. That's 641 people that they caught in El Paso alone. Doesn't count the people they didn't catch. Doesn't count the people who crossed the border in other places. 641 there by themselves. Meanwhile, Governor Newsom in California, even though he had a glimpse of rationality about the high-speed rail system, that they said, well, we can't do that from L.A. to San Francisco, and it doesn't even cross water. You know, Alexander Ocasional Cortex said, oh, we're going to get rid of planes. And President Trump said, it's going to be kind of hard to get to Europe in a train. You know, she can walk on water, so I'm sure that she can make trains run on water as well. But no, Governor Newsom said, I don't think we can even afford to do this between L.A. and San Francisco. But he says that the border issue is, quote, a manufactured crisis. What a bunch of nonsense. And he's going to pull the National Guard there in California away from the border. Very different approach here in Texas. The state of Texas, reports Breitbart, is looking, you got a couple of two members in the Texas House of Representatives, looking at taking $2.5 billion out of the rainy day fund that we have here in Texas and using that to protect the border. It's called the Texas Economic Stabilization Fund. And folks, that would be a good use of that money, because we're not going to have economic stabilization if we have completely open borders. And I find it very interesting that while Texas has a rainy day fund that actually has money in it, that New Jersey needs to have a rainy day tax. They've got a rain tax that they're putting out there because they don't have the money for their infrastructure. Why? Because they have bankrupted themselves with their welfare state. And so if they're going to do something like build a storm drain, they got to put in a rain tax to fund that. I tweeted about that, and somebody said, rain tax? What in the world is that? I'm like, yeah, well, you know, ask the people in New Jersey about the rain tax. So we have money for a rainy day, but they have a hole and not a drainage hole. They have a need for that. So they're going to have to pass a tax there in New Jersey, Governor Murphy. The bill here in Texas, however, though, to take $2.5 billion from the Texas Rainy Day Fund, also known as the Texas Economic Stabilization Fund, that is still in the drafting phase, but they believe that a bill will be filed soon. And then you have some of the illegal immigrant families that they say were separated, and they've found some eager lawyers, of course, who are eager to rip off the American taxpayer and the U.S. government for $3 million apiece, saying, you separated us. You separated us. We broke the law. We endangered our children. It's like, fine, okay, well, you know, if you're a family and you drag your kids across the border, you know, we had that one individual, and it was, I forget now whether it was Kamala Harris or Ocasional Cortex, because they seem to be so much alike in terms of what they say. It's kind of hard to distinguish them anymore because the idiotic things coming out of both of their mouths are so similar. But one of them was talking about the child that died at the border, blaming that on ICE. And when that came out, I said, it's a tragedy that that child died, but it's not ICE's fault. It's not the Border Patrol. Border Patrol has rescued a lot of people. They got trapped in the desert. A lot of people die. It's a very dangerous journey, the desert as well as the drug cartels. No, the person who caused that death is the father who endangered that child. And now they have the audacity to sue the American public for $3 million. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Money.
It's not easy being green. Seems you blend in with so many other ordinary things. And people tend to pass you over because you're not standing out like flashy sparkles in the water. Or stars in the sky.
Yeah, except that's the whole point of this. Occasional Cortex did want to stand out like
but
stars in the
green's
sky.
Green's the color of spring.
She didn't want to be passed over. She didn't want to, you know, one of the things that's really worked for the environmental movement is that they could take these plans that they had, you know, this deal that they're going to offer
green,
you. And they could camouflage it
like a
with the environment. This is socialism. It is communism. It is authoritarianism. It is the failure of central planning. But it's camouflaged in green. Now, what she did was she pulled that back because she wanted to be a star. She wanted everybody to see her. That's why Nancy Pelosi and others said, I don't know what they're talking about or whatever. Well, it's going to get a lot harder to be green. Mitch McConnell realizes that we've got a burgeoning field of presidential wannabes in the Democrat Party, many of them senators. There's at least six senators who want to run for president and who want to bask in the radiant glow of occasional cortex and all the publicity that is showered on her by the media. And so they signed on to this. And so Mitch McConnell, in a rare moment that I enjoy watching him, because again, he's a guy who, for the most part, just like on this border wall, I think he undermines where we really want to go. He is part of the deep state. He's part of the establishment. Not that much difference between Mitch and the Democrats. But this is one of these, when you get into the details of the nitty-gritty game, I mean, this is, like rival NFL teams. Yeah, they're all playing for the same league, but, you know, there is some competition there. And he really kind of relished this. I'm going to play this clip for you. And if you're watching this video, I want you to see the little hint of glimmer in Mitch McConnell's eyes. The guy who normally is deadpan. There's no life, no energy, no expression. But he got a little bit of a glimmer there when he talked about bringing this up for a vote. Here's Mitch McConnell.
I've noted with great interest the Green New Deal. And we're going to be voting on that in the Senate. We'll give everybody an opportunity to go on record and see how they feel about the Green New Deal.
There it is. Just a little bit. Don't show any emotion. Got to be deadpan. You know, it kind of reminds me of the turtle from Duck and Cover every time I watch him. He's got that little bit of a flash there when he talks about it. I've noticed with great interest the Green New Deal. And we're going to be voting on that in the Senate. We're going to give everybody an opportunity to go on the record. All you Democrats who signed on with occasional cortex, you're going to get a chance to go on the record. And we're going to see how you really feel about this Green New Deal. We're going to put your votes where your mouth is. And as the Washington Post tweeted about it, they said McConnell is considering on taking it up for a vote. Well, you just heard him say that. That was yesterday morning. He did say he's going to do it. And as Washington Post writer Robert Costa said, as a way to rattle Senate Democrats. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, see, the problem is she told people where they're actually going to go with all this stuff. And if you understand where this stuff is going, it's yellow vest time here in America. And when we look at the deal, again, as I said, it's not a Green New Deal. It's red. It's communist. It's socialist. It's very old. We've seen this throughout the 20th century. We've seen a lot of elements of it done by FDR as a blatant attempt to centralize power in this country. But in other places where it's been taken farther, we can see the results in hundreds of millions of people dying in the Soviet Union and in the great leap forward that they had in communist China. I'm surprised that she didn't use that term. She's dense enough to think, oh, I like that, not know the history behind it. But yeah, it is a cultural revolution, just like Mao's cultural revolution. And so it is not green, it is not new, it is red, it is old. And if we want to talk about it as being a deal, folks, this is a deal where the dealers are holding all the cards. And they're dealing from the bottom of the deck. It is a rigged game. I said they're going to have a 10-year national mobilization. Well, you know, of course, the UN 2030 Agenda for Sustainability. That came from the United Nations. The only thing that's changed with all this stuff is that occasional cortex broke the conspiracy of silence. She didn't want to camouflage it. She wanted to draw attention to it. She wanted to bask in the glory of being a star, a media star. And, of course, Ed Markey has joined with her as well. Markey said, the green generation has risen up, and they are saying that they want this issue solved. And they have no idea what they're talking about. A coalition, they said, of labor, economic justice, racial justice, indigenous and environmental organizations immediately announced their support. And, you know, they're going to get rid of meat, airplanes, private transportation, everything. President Trump mocked it as brilliant. He said it would be great for the so-called carbon footprint to permanently eliminate all planes, cars, cows, oil, gas, and the military, even if no other country would do the same. Brilliant. He went on to say, how do you take a train to Europe? As I said before, it's no problem. She can walk on water. We're suspending reality here. We've got to reorganize our economies because of unicorn farts, and we don't need to be concerned about realities like how we get to Europe. Meanwhile, they can't even get from L.A. to San Francisco for multiple reasons. Number one, they refuse to invest in infrastructure. They refuse to invest in roads. You know, you can't keep making the roads wider and wider. Everybody understood this. I've said this many times. I say you go back and you look at the movies that they were making back in the 1920s and 30s. You go back and look at Fritz Lang's Metropolis and so forth. They always show modern cities. They knew the buildings are going to get higher and higher, right? Well, the roads are going to have to get higher and higher, too. As Elon Musk summed it up. He said, we're building our cities in three dimensions, but we're not building our roads except in two dimensions, and they're not building them there either. As a matter of fact, they're constricting them. They're putting them on road diets. They're cutting out vast swaths of the road for automobiles and reserving them for bicyclists who don't use them. My wife and I went back to Tampa, where I grew up. I take care of some family business, and we were there for a few days, and I said, look at this, you know, look at how narrow the lanes are and how they put bicycle paths everywhere. And we were there for several days, never saw a single person on a bicycle in one day. Saw a middle-aged man, one middle-aged man riding a bicycle one day. And I said, look at that. They've taken up half the road space throughout this city for that one guy. He must really be something, right? So Gavin Newsom said, let's be real. We're not going to go through with this anymore. It's now up to $77 billion. Some people say it's going to cost $100 billion to go from L.A. to San Francisco. They're not going to invest in roads, and they can't build the infrastructure even for a train that they would control. I've told the story before when I went to a Raleigh City Council meeting, and there was a Democrat, socialist, communist, whatever you want to call her. She had just gone to the Soviet Union. It was before they fell. And she came back and said, this is wonderful. We need a rail system here in Little Raleigh, you know, where Andy and Barney live and they, you know, roll up the streets at 9 o'clock at night. We need to have a monorail, light rail system here, you know, because I can ride anywhere I want to in Moscow for 9 cents. It's like, no, it costs you everything, everything to do that. It costs those people everything. We'll be right back.
Of deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, your host, David Knight.
Yeah, in the environmental movement, to tell the truth was a revolutionary act, and that's why they're so upset about what occasional cortex is. You actually told people the truth about where this is headed. And there will be no place to run, no place to hide. There'll be no place to live, no place that you can afford in the cities. So make the apartments smaller and smaller and grungier, and you'll have to be there in that city. That's where you will live and work, and it's going to get pretty bad. They will be following you everywhere you go. You can't hide from them. You won't own anything. They will own everything. I mean, they're going to own not just own the infrastructure. They will own all the robot cars. They will tax them, and they will partner in a public-private partnership for complete control in these smart cities. The brainchild of the UN globalists. That's how this all ties together, folks. It's a very neat package, quite frankly. We need to wake up, and we need to grab our yellow vests, because we've got to push back against this. I want to get into what Gavin Newsom had to say, and then I'm going to prove to you that this is totally unsustainable, not just from an economic standpoint, but from a technology standpoint. These schemes of electric cars and renewable energy are absolute nonsense. And so is the science that is being used to push the need for it. That's absolute nonsense as well. So we're going to get into some technology issues, something that I haven't covered before. I don't think you've heard this before. I talk about how the renewable revolution has a problem, a technology problem, that they can't solve. They have no solution for it, nowhere close to it. But before we do, I want to talk about the sustainability of free speech. You know, we've been attacked. We've been the first ones to be very publicly attacked. We were the not only the poster child, but we were the beta test for state censorship being implemented through these big corporations that are going to own everything, that are part of this public-private partnership to control and track and tax you, everything that you do. And they are working just as we had Gavin Newsom and Ali Alexander in yesterday. Gavin McGinnis. Yeah, we didn't have Gavin Newsom in. I wouldn't have him in here. We had Gavin McGinnis in. Different Gavin. Anyway, they were talking about how he's going to fight back against the banning, lifetime banning that they put against him. But they've done the same thing to InfoWars. And YouTube. Shut down everything that I've done. I've got an article here. YouTube will determine what a conspiracy is, and then they will stop recommending such videos. You know, they may not take the harsh step of completely flushing everything that you've done if they don't like it. But of course, it's not just going to be what is a conspiracy video? And then they said other meritless medical claims. In other words, if you start talking about big pharmaceuticals, or you push back against mandatory vaccines, or if you talk about the government's conspiracy to get us into endless wars like the Iraq War, using false flags and lies, you do any of that kind of stuff, or you oppose the military-industrial complex, YouTube will shut you down. They'll shut down. They'll just kind of shadow ban your video. That's they're going to pull it back and do it a little bit more softly. And that is coming. That is coming. But we've already experienced it. And then for us, they attack us financially. They try to defund us by taking away the people that process payments. You can get through all that, folks, and you can shove the First Amendment down their throats by supporting InfoWars. You can show that they're not going to get away with this. They're not going to get away with shadow bans. They're not going to get away with the overt bans. They're not going to get away with taking over the internet. They're not going to get away with using their shills like the Southern Poverty Law Center to identify everybody as hateful or racist or whatever so that they got some kind of plausible deniability in their role in this. We understand that it's the Atlantic Council, it's NATO and others who are behind this. After they banned InfoWars, 2 months later, they took down 800 sites. Now, most of those are people who supported President Trump and conservatives because they aren't part of this globalist agenda. They voted for President Trump in many cases because they're not neocons. They don't want endless wars and other things like that. But they also took down a lot of libertarians and leftists who had opposed endless wars, just as we've seen them come after Tulsi Gabbard. I've got a clip from her I want to play for you. Warmongers in their ivory towers. Oh, they're going to come after her hard, just like they came after us. But folks, if you want to keep this going, go to InfoWarsStore.com. We've got some great specials there. We've got a Brain Synergy Combo, Brain Force Plus, my favorite supplement. You can get 50% off in combo with our newest product, Turbo Force. Also, Ultimate Bone Broth, ancient super nutrients. This is stuff that you don't have to worry about side effects. But we've put ancient super nutrients in the Ultimate Bone Broth, 50% off. Another ancient solution for attacking bacteria and virus is silver. And we have a great nano silver, a couple of products in a combo. Two powerful silver cell technology formulas. Nano silver, we have the Immune Gargle Wound Gel for topical use. It keeps that silver there on the wound, just like they still use it in burn units, as I've pointed out many times. It is antibacterial, antiviral at the same time, and no side effects on nano silver. You can get the Immune Gargle Wound Gel in combo with the Immune Gargle Multipurpose Spray, 40% off. You can find all those specials at InfoWarsStore.com. You can support InfoWars. You can support free speech. You can support the free press. And you can say no to the Silicon controllers, the Silicon censorship. All right, they're saying no to, at least Gavin Newsom is, saying no to a high-speed boondoggle, L.A. to San Francisco. He said, let's be real. And I've got a clip where he talks to people about the reality of the situation. Here is Gavin Newsom pushing back against this boondoggle plan by Arnold Schwarzenegger and Governor Moonbeam Jerry Brown, and he has now terminated that Moonbeam plan. Here's Gavin Newsom.
Let's be real. The current project, as planned, would cost too much and respectfully take too long. There's been too little oversight and not enough transparency. Right now, there simply isn't a path to get from Sacramento to San Diego, let alone from, you know, San Francisco to L.A. I wish there were. However, we do have the capacity to complete a high-speed rail link between Merced and Bakersfield.
Now, the governor emphasized he's not abandoning the project altogether, but there are no longer any plans to build the bullet train between Northern and Southern California. Instead, that high-speed rail project will link the Central Valley communities of Merced and Bakersfield.
For those
of
you,
they've kind of downsized.
I know you're out there that just want to throw away this whole project, sort of give up on this whole endeavor. I just offer you this. Abandoning the high-speed rail entirely means we will have wasted billions and billions of dollars with nothing but broken promises, partially fulfilled commitments, and lawsuits to show for it.
Oh, so it's not going to be a train to nowhere. It's going to go between a couple of small communities in the Central Valley and say they did it. And as you saw that there, of course, they are showing a computer-generated bullet train. Because it doesn't exist. There's not only a train to nowhere, it can be found nowhere right now. And as they pointed out, the initial estimate of it was $37 billion in 2008. It's now soared. The only thing that is going fast is the time as it's flying by and the dollars as they're flying out the door. It has now gone up to $100 billion and is estimated to be going up even that was as of last year. In 2014, Breitbart News revealed that the high-speed, I'm reading from Breitbart's report on this, revealed that the high-speed train would not be so high-speed after all. It would run slower on the tracks from San Jose to San Francisco and then from the San Fernando Valley into downtown Los Angeles. Still, Governor Brown defended it in his final State of the State. He said, I make no bones about it. I like trains, and I like high-speed trains even better. So did the voters in 2008 when they approved the bond. Look, 11 other countries have high-speed trains, but they can't build it here. He says, yes, it costs a lot of money, but it's cheaper than building freeways or airports. Well, they're not building those very well either in a reasonable amount of time because of corruption, waste, fraud, abuse, and we accept that. The thrill is gone with the bullet trains in California. Isn't that something?
The thrill is gone.
I was just reading you from Governor Jerry Brown in his final State of the State. He said, I like trains. I'm going to call him Jerry the Train Engine. You know, like put his face on there instead of Thomas the Tank Engine. But, of course, it was also Arnold Schwarzenegger who liked that as well. And now it's been terminated by the new governor, Gavin Newsom. Now, he's not completely rational himself. Because he was saying, you know, I think this situation at the border is a manufactured crisis. Well, they have a crisis in manufacturing bullet trains, too. At least he's faced that reality. And it was interesting, I think, when Jerry Brown was talking about this in his final address before he left. He says, yeah, it costs a lot of money, but I think it'll be cheaper than building freeways to meet the growing demand. I was just thinking about it. Last couple of days, driving past a new private subdivision that's being built not too far from where I live. And these people have been working on it for just a few months. They went in and they cleared all the ground. They leveled all the ground. They've poured miles and miles of roads and curbs and all that kind of stuff. And they put in infrastructure for drainage and for water and so forth. They haven't actually started building the houses yet, but they've gotten all that stuff done. And I've been watching what's been happening over, I don't know how long it was going on before I came here, but I've been watching the train wreck of road construction here in Austin that's been dragging on and going over budget for 7 or 8 years, and they still aren't finished with it. As a matter of fact, they've torn up another area, and everything that they're doing is just adding one or two toll lanes. They took one route down by the airport, and they added traffic lights on the non-toll areas. And then on a very short distance, you can jump on and pay them to get past the traffic lights that they added to force you onto the toll roads. And then they have the audacity to use taxpayer money to lecture you about what a precious commodity time is and how you ought to be on their toll roads. That makes me spitting mad. I will not get on their toll roads. I don't care how many traffic lights they put out there. I absolutely refuse to use those toll roads. And then they just opened, when I first moved here, they just opened some toll roads up in the north part of town. Now they've taken a massive approach to do it on that same road south of town. And they're going to add six toll roads in the middle and then add traffic lights on the side if you don't ride on their toll lane. That's what these son of a guns are doing here in Texas. Now, we had Governor Abbott and the lieutenant governor say, well, you know, we're going to run. We're going to stop the toll. But they didn't stop the toll. So they didn't sign on to any new plans, but they didn't stop the construction or the collection of tolls on these other roads. They let it continue to go and on and on and on. These things are running over budget just like the bullet train, because the government can't do anything right, won't do anything right. He says, yeah, we got growing demand. They allow subdivisions to be built, and the people can build the subdivisions in no time, because they would go out of business if they were as incompetent and corrupt and criminal as the Department of Transportation is. And yet we here, even in Texas, look at this stuff and say, well, that's the way it is. Yeah, it takes them forever to build anything, and the cost goes up, and all they do is build toll roads, but that's the way that it is. We shouldn't accept that. That is unacceptable. But we become accustomed to it. It's the new normal. And so you have growing demand. They build new neighborhoods. They bring more and more people in. They build the buildings higher and higher. And yet nothing happens to the transportation infrastructure. It's growing demand. And they just can't afford it or figure out how to do it. But then he goes on. Jerry Brown says, whether it's roads or trains or dams or renewable energy installations or zero emission cars, California is setting the pace for America. Well, that pace is just put on the brakes and stopped. It's not zero emissions, it's zero movement that they've got going on here. And you just had the LA mayor, Garcetti, referred to the Green New Deal and said, I'm going to cancel the building of 3 new natural gas plants that would provide electricity for the city. They're going to start having brownouts. I mean, they're going to go the route of Detroit. Our big cities are turning into third world cesspools that don't have any power. That's what's going to happen there in L.A. He said the power will come from wind and solar. And as Breitbart points out, somehow. I've done a lot of reports on this. I've studied this. You know, they had the same situation that happened off the coast of Ireland. They said, well, we got the wind power that we put out there. It's very windy out there in the sea off the coast of Ireland. But we're getting these big peaks and troughs in electric power generation. It just doesn't work on a power grid, because the power grid's got to be steady state. You can't have it surging and then going down to nothing. You know, if somebody's trying to do manufacturing off the power grid, and you get these brownouts, they've got to shut the entire factory down and try to reboot the thing from scratch. So it doesn't work. So I said, oh, okay, we got an idea. We'll enlarge the wind power collection field. We'll make it much, much bigger. And we'll get rid of those peaks and troughs. Well, what they found was that they just got bigger peaks and bigger troughs. They didn't get anything to cancel out and become steady state. But here's the real issue, folks. It's not just technology. It's also resources. It's a great article on Zero Hedge today from oilprice.com. The renewable revolution has a lithium problem. Uh-huh. Yeah. And it's not just batteries, folks. Yeah. What they might find is that, I'll give you the bottom line here. Renewable energy relies on certain decidedly non-renewable resources, like lithium, like rare earth minerals, and so forth, that they don't have a solution for. The renewable power sources like solar and wind and so forth. That requires energy storage on a massive scale. They don't have the technology for that. But even if they had the technology for it, the materials that they're using are non-renewable. A lot of them are under the control of the Chinese communists. Or they're in Afghanistan. One of the reasons why the U.S. military says we're not leaving Afghanistan. Because they want to get that lithium there. Let me tell you something. We talk about lithium that is highly used for batteries. Maybe all of you environmentalist wackos out there need to take the lithium for your bipolar disorder. Because you're going to need it for that. You know, these people that are all over the place in terms of protecting the environment. But just be aware of the fact that when you take lithium for your bipolar psychological distress and your mood swings, that it also causes the early onset of Parkinson's. Anyway, that's just a warning for all you environmentalists out there. You may be able to get lithium for your bipolar disorders, your psychological problems, but you're not going to get it for your batteries for very long. It's not renewable. As they point out in this article here, they said there's a concerted effort in Europe to switch energy consumption to 100% renewable as soon as the year 2050. Oh, they're moving that up. They're moving that up. That's why I said all of these crazy, wacko ideas that Occasional Cortex has thrown out there are already being implemented in Europe. It's one of the reasons why you got the yellow vests taking to the streets every weekend, because it is destroying the middle class and the working class in France. They go on to say, even if Europe achieves this target and takes the lead as the rest of the world follows down the path towards 100% renewable energy, we would still not be living in a completely sustainable green energy utopia. There is a considerable downside to this plan. Even renewable energy relies on certain decidedly non-renewable resources. Solar panels cannot be made without the use of a finite source of rare earth elements. Batteries are also completely dependent on finite earth-sourced materials for their fabrication. These people don't like mining either. That's another big part of the problem. Now, they might be able to go in and strip mine Afghanistan, you know, because if it's out of sight, it's out of mind. You know, they have their ban on internal combustion engines, but, you know, if they are running the electric grid off of coal and they don't see the coal power plant out there, you know, the Chinese with their very, very dirty power plants can pretend that they're going totally green because they got electric cars. And you know what? If as dirty as the power plants in China and India are, and of course the Paris Climate Accord that they all signed on to, would allow India and China to continue to build those very, very dirty power plants without restrictions on either quantity or quality of the air that they put out, even though we have very clean ones here, they're going to be able to build an infinite number of very dirty plants. But in those countries, if you had a gasoline-powered car that got even 37 miles per gallon, it would be cleaner than their electric cars running off of their dirty coal plants. But let's not pay attention to that. Let's not pay attention to the external combustion cycle that's going on there. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
It's your move. This is the David Knight Show.
Welcome back. Yeah, they've got a little bit of a renewable problem with their renewable energy. The problem is the technology is not there. The problem is when you try to use it on a grid level, you know, to basically power your cities and so forth. Yes, you can do renewable energy very cleanly, very effectively, if you do it individually. You have to make your home very energy efficient, but you can have the kind of battery storage. A lot of people go out and buy used lead-acid batteries, you know, from cars and so forth to put that together at an economical way, because that's a very expensive part of that. But there's no way, there's no technology that they've come up yet with that allows them to store the energy in the kind of quantity that you need for the power grid. And then if you look at the battery technology that is starting to improve, you have a problem with the materials that are being used, the rare earth minerals that are metals that are being used for the solar panels, or the lithium that is being used for the batteries. As I was talking about in the last section, lithium is an essential component to many of the batteries thanks to its lightweight and its highly reactive properties. And for renewable energy to work on a grand scale, massive amounts of energy storage potential are required. Lithium is also an essential ingredient in the batteries that power both hybrid and electric cars. So it's a big part of that. But we have a limited supply of lithium. The place where we get most of it from is Afghanistan. That's one of the reasons that we're still there, quite frankly. I've reported that many times. But here's an idea of what this problem looks like. As they point out in this article, if all the conventionally fueled cars in the world were replaced with electric cars overnight, the global supply of lithium would be completely depleted in just 50 years. And, of course, that is kind of hypothetical because right now there's only 3 million electric cars currently in use globally. Now, to put that in perspective, this morning they reported that the bank, the Federal Reserve, and other people are looking at economic indicators and measurements, the strength of the economy in this country, are getting kind of concerned because they've been extending credit to a lot of people to buy cars, and we've got about 7 million car loans that are delinquent in the U.S. alone. But the number of electric cars, and that's a big problem. You want to talk about something that's renewable, something that is sustainable. We have a lot of aspects of our economy that are not sustainable, even before we get to this environmentalism issue. So there's an economic non-sustainability. But just think about the fact that the delinquent car loans here in America alone are more than twice the number of electric cars worldwide. That's how small it is. Even with all the subsidies that we've given, people still don't want it. Less than 1% of the cars were sold as electric cars, even when we tried to bribe people. It's kind of like that saying, you couldn't pay me to buy that thing, right? And I'll tell you why. I got stuck this morning because of the cold weather. You know, whenever you have a battery that's a little bit marginal, and I've got a battery that's only 2 years old, and I've had it now die on me twice. I was saved by the InfoWars Jumpstart battery kit. I don't even know if we sell it anymore. I haven't seen it for a while, but I bought it a few years ago, and that battery still worked. I was able to jumpstart my car, the little battery thing. But after 2 years, as soon as the weather got cold, and I was talking about how the cold weather and even hot weather has wreaked havoc on electric cars this winter and this last summer. Really takes it out of them. If they can't, that's a reason why they can't sell more than they do, even with massive subsidies. And those subsidies have already run off for these various car companies. And Trump is not really too interested in adding those in. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Deceit. Telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And now, the David Knight Show.
Yeah, let's tell the truth about the environmental movement. I've got a whistleblowing scientist talking about climate and sea level. I've got one of the founders of Greenpeace saying the Green New Deal will kill almost everyone. I've just told you how it's based on rare materials that they have a limited supply of, so it's not sustainable from that standpoint. I'm going to talk about how the labor unions are worried about this. It's going to take a bite out of the Democrats in a lot of different ways. But let's start with the poster child of all this stuff, Tesla. And again, Tesla is a great example, a great poster child for all this stuff, because Tesla is founded on crony capitalism, massive government subsidies. Now, you and I don't get several billion dollars to open up our business, but if you're Elon Musk or an NFL sports team owner, you know, you can count on that big paycheck coming from the government. You know, these people are getting more in subsidies for their stadiums and for their electric car companies than the entire net worth of Donald Trump. You have a problem with that? I have a problem with that. I would think that President Trump would have a problem with that. And yet, we still keep seeing these problems. Not only are they unsustainable, they're also unsafe. You know, the two things that Elon Musk has hyped in order to get his massive paycheck from the government are his self-driving cars, which they're very eager to have. They want to make sure that you don't have control of your car. They want to also make sure that you don't own your car or own the private transportation. They want to make sure that they can follow and control your every movement and tax your every movement. So they want to have these robot taxis everywhere. So that's a big part of it. They like that about Elon Musk. He's really pushed that for them. They also like the fact that he's pushed this electric car business as well. But let's just take a look at the autopilot aspect of this, because I just talked about the lithium. We just had another Tesla crash in New Jersey, and that happened on Monday. And was reported on Monday, rather, by just a couple of people. It came to light on Monday. It was a driver in North Brunswick, New Jersey, wrecked his Tesla on a highway while the vehicle was in autopilot mode. According to a report published by the News 12 in New Jersey, the driver said the vehicle, quote, got confused due to lane markings at a point where the driver could have stayed on the highway or have taken an exit. He says that the autopilot split the difference and went down the middle between the exit and stayed on the highway. Furthermore, he claims that when he tried to regain control of the vehicle, it would not let him. Oh, but see, that's not a bug, that's a feature. The government wants to have computer-driven cars so that you can't control them. And quite frankly, when I looked at the description of this, it looked very much like the death that we saw before. And other people who had to try to wrest control away from their Tesla, but maybe they've had a software update that happened overnight to some of these drivers so that no longer can you wrestle control away from it. We've had situations that have been shown in the past and were involved in one particular death where the road did exactly that, where the road split and the car got confused about the lane markings and went right down the middle, just like this guy said, except in that particular case, right down the middle was a concrete barrier. And it killed the driver, who maybe wasn't paying attention or maybe was not able to get control of the car. Some of the driver's claims and Tesla's full response were later edited out of the News 12 New Jersey report without explanation. Because, you know, he's got a lot of influence. Don't want to get Elon Musk upset. Don't criticize what Elon Musk does. Especially because, you know, he's got friends in high places and he's got lots of money, lots of your money, that's been given to him by the government. So as that comes out, and yet another crash there with an autopilot Tesla. Remember, it was just the beginning of January when I wasn't here that we had the director of Google's Waymo, that's their self-driving unit, talking about their autonomous vehicles, and he admitted self-driving cars will never be able to drive in all conditions. And he also admitted that people in Phoenix, where they're running their human experiments without people's knowledge or consent, because that's what this is. You put a self-driving car out there, you're experimenting with it, and you're doing it on the public roads. And the government that is all about safety, aren't they? You know, they're always giving us tickets, lecturing us, mandating things on our cars, always for safety, and yet they don't care that these people are putting this stuff out on the road as an experiment. And the people in Phoenix are not happy about this. As a matter of fact, he talked about how Phoenix area residents have attacked Google's self-driving cars, Waymo, with knives, with rocks, with PVC pipes, with guns. Others have attempted to run them off the road. Maybe you have to try to run off the Waymo cars. The Tesla cars will run off the road by themselves, but maybe you have to do that with the Waymo cars. He said, it's really, really hard. You don't know what you don't know until you're actually in there and trying to do things. Sounds like Donald Rumsfeld, doesn't he? We have known unknowns, and we have unknown unknowns. And one of the unknown unknowns is how these cars are going to react in certain situations. So we just have to put them out there on the highway with you and your family and your children in the cars and see what they do. You know, they might make the right decision. Maybe they won't. We don't know. I remember it was in California that they were talking about how angry the people there were. I mean, here they were talking about Phoenix, Arizona. And I remember one of the articles there talking about how frustrated the human drivers were with these slow-moving robo-taxis. You know, the goal, I guess, is so that you'll be able to take an open cup of coffee and set it on the dashboard and never have the thing spill it because it'll be moving at such a creepingly slow speed. But they got up to a situation where it was a four-way stop. And they said, you know, human drivers can kind of read the signals and the reactions of other human drivers at a four-way stop, but the AI computer can't do that yet. And so pull up there at a four-way stop, and it wouldn't know what to do. And the other drivers would take advantage of it. And so you had a situation, guy says, yeah, it's really hard being in these cars and taking them out for, you know, testing and so forth, because you know, I remember we were stuck at this four-way stop, and it was over 5 minutes. Think about that, 5 minutes. You ever time yourself at a stoplight? That's the sort of thing I do to keep my sanity. I don't have to take lithium, but I do little things like timing this and saying, you know, how long is this stoplight taking? Well, you know, that's the Texas Department of Transportation again doing that. But that's just the way I amuse myself and keep control. I do little things like time the traffic lights, or I time how long it takes me to fill up my car with gasoline and think about how much time I'm saving since I'm not trying to charge a battery. But when you look at even a long stoplight, it's typically less than a minute. These people were stopped at that four-way stop for 5 minutes. And after, I don't know how long that it took the car to get across, but after 5 minutes, he said, yeah, there was an elderly guy, white hair, and he started honking the horn and cut around us and did everything but get out of the car. But they have had people get out of the car and attack their cars in Arizona. And, of course, the cars have attacked pedestrians in Arizona as well. We've seen that with the Uber car that killed the pedestrian going across the road because they had turned off the emergency braking system because it was erratic. That's absolutely right. And we had a story at InfoWars about how, yeah, these things are just going to be cruising around because there's not going to be any parking spaces because the urban planners don't want to build parking spaces. They don't want to widen the roads. They don't want to elevate the roads like they do with the buildings. They don't want to build parking spaces. So you're going to have the people with self-driving cars or the Uber robo taxis, and they're just going to be cruising around in loops, you know, completely empty. And I said, yeah, that makes sense. I see that already happening with the urban buses in every town that I go to. And, you know, once we get rid of the human bus drivers and the urban buses here in Austin, they'll be completely empty, like those AI cars that are, you know, cruising around because they can't find a place to stop. All right, stay with us and come back. We're going to take a look at the whistleblowing UN IPC scientists. This guy finally just quit in disgust after the UN kept burying his information. He said they don't want to debate it. They want to cover it up. Oh, that kind of sounds like YouTube and Google and Facebook and Apple, doesn't it? You may be right. I may be crazy. Oh, but it just may be a lunatic you're looking for. It's too late to find. It's too late to change. Welcome back. I've got some updates as well coming up here on gun confiscation. It is exploding across the country. And things are starting to look pretty bad on the political level for gun confiscation. I've got a couple more things I want to say about climate change. We'll talk a little bit about the trans agenda and what is happening in schools. There's a new tactic that's coming in schools. If you think you're worried about mandatory vaccines from these so-called pro-choice Democrats, there's something far more sinister coming. We're going to break that down for you as well. And we're going to talk about some new tactics and censorship coming from our Silicon Masters coming in that are loaded up, as well as Tulsi Gabbard talking about the warmongers and their ivory towers. We've got a 30-second spot that she released I think you want to see. But let's finish up on this climate stuff. We've got a UN IPCC scientist, and of course that's the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. Actually, it ought to be the UNBS, just abbreviate it. But this scientist, his name is Dr. Niels Axel Møhner. He's retired head of the Paleogeophysics and Geodynamics at Stockholm University. He was interviewed by Alex Newman. I've talked to Alex many times. He is heavy on this climate change beat. He was at the recent confab that they had in Poland, where the Polish people and the Trump administration trolled them with coal exhibits. And Alex is right there on the spot, along with Mark Moreno, who I also talk to frequently on here. But he interviewed, Alex Newman for newamerican.com, interviewed the scientist from Sweden, from Stockholm University. And this scientist believes that a new solar-driven cooling period is on the way. Now, that's exactly what Dr. Willie Soon has said, and we've interviewed him multiple times as well. As a matter of fact, it was, I think it's last Thursday, when I wasn't here, Harrison Smith interviewed him on the program, and he talked about the fact that there's indications that we have a new cooling period coming, and it's being driven by a decreasing solar activity. Remember, when we had the very first Earth Day, if you remember that, back in 1970, we were told that we were headed toward a new ice age, and then that kind of cooked along for a while. They started telling everybody, we're also running out of all the oil and coal, and so we got to ration it, you know, because we're all going to freeze to death. And then they came back and said, oh, no, it's not going to cool. It's going to have global warming. And they came up with all their models and predictions and said, oh, it's based on the greenhouse effect and carbon dioxide and so forth. And then all their models failed. We saw CO2 go up, and we saw no concurrent increase in temperature as they had predicted. So all their predictions failed. And again, most of these predictions, it takes a while for this because most of these predictions are over decades or centuries that they're projecting climate out. It's not like weather. You know, we can look at the weather and we can laugh at the weatherman because he's got bad models. And I've been to the American Meteorological Society, and you look at all these people who are doing real science. I mean, they're really trying to predict the weather in a short period of time. And they come up with the models, they measure the weather, and they say, well, you know, we said it was going to do this in 2 or 3 days, and it didn't do that, or it did do that, and so forth. And so they're constantly trying to fine-tune those models. But it's a little bit different situation with climate change. These people are trading on their authority and their reputation. And this guy wasn't having any of it. When this professor, Dr. Møhner, tried to warn the UN IPCC that it was publishing false information that would be inevitably discredited, they simply ignored him. They didn't debate him. See, that's the key thing. When we talk about censorship, that's the whole point. They don't debate people. They censor people. They don't debate ideas. They purge ideas. And then they push their ideas out there as the only ones that you're allowed to hear. And that's exactly what the UN did to this professor. So he was disgusted, and he resigned, and he became a whistleblower. So Alex Newman, as he's interviewing him, he said, what about coastal cities like Miami? Are they going to be flooded due to sea level rise caused by alleged man-made global warming? And he said, absolutely not. There is no rapid sea level rise going on today. There will not be. And he cited his observable data. So the on the contrary, if anything happens, the sea will go down a little. And he said that he's been tracking sea levels in various parts of the globe for 50 years. And he blasted those who use incorrect correction factors in their data to make it appear that the seas are rising. And we've seen that before, haven't we? In ClimateGate, oh, let's hide the decrease. Oh, well, let's add a fudge factor. How many times have we seen this story repeated? The data didn't match their predictions, didn't match their models, so they corrected it. They corrected it so that it would match the models. And then they released that information. We've seen NASA doing it. We've seen NOAA doing it. We've especially seen Michael Mann, the guy who invented the hockey stick fiction for Al Gore, also part of the climate gate fraud. He went on to say, he said, even talking about something called a global sea level is highly misleading. It's very different in different parts of the world. And as Alex Newman says, we took did this interview right next to a sea level marker that was there in the Baltic Sea that had been put there in the 18th century in Stockholm. And it showed the Baltic sea level at the time it was made. But because the ground has been shown to have risen there, somebody going up there says, well, if they know the ground has risen, if they can measure the ground has risen, then they think the sea level has fallen. But it's not. That's what he's saying. You can't talk about that on a global basis. His conclusion is that solar activity and its effects on the globe have been the dominant factor. Who would have thought? Who would have thought that the sun would be dominant? Well, it's exactly what Dr. Willie Soon has said. He said that CO2, if it has any effect, is minute. It doesn't matter. What has a big effect is the sun. But here's the key takeaway, folks. It's not science. What they're doing is not science. He said they just ignored what I was saying. If they were clever, if they had the facts on their side, they could show and debate me and say, no, you're wrong. But that is not the case. They just will not discuss it. I will try to discuss it. I will show with their own data that they are wrong, because in science, we discuss. We don't forbid. We don't neglect. But that's precisely what the globalists do. That's precisely what they want their surrogates in the media and their controllers of the internet to do. That's why you have this situation with YouTube. YouTube will determine what a conspiracy is, and they will stop recommending such videos. So they're going to start shadow banning people after they banned us off of YouTube, after they flushed my reports for years down the drain, because they don't want to discuss, they don't want to debate them. I'm perfectly willing to have a debate with any of these people. I've asked this guy, Andrew Yang, who wants to run, one of the first people, I think he was the first person in the Democrat Party to announce he's going to run for president. He wanted to do it because he wanted to push the idea of universal basic income. Well, that's nonsense. And I wanted to debate him. He agreed to come on initially, and then he backed off, and he won't come on and debate it. That's what these people do. They won't debate it. They just forbid any kind of debate. They won't even support their own conclusions, their own models, their own data. And this guy is calling him out on it again. All right, stay with us when we come back. We're going to talk about gun control. We're going to talk about the uncontrolled wars and the way that they try to shut that down by banning that discussion as well, just as they did with Tulsi Gabbard. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
In a world of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. It's the David Knight Show.
All right, let's talk in these last couple of segments that we've got on the show. Let's talk about the attacks and the method that they're using to come after free speech and your freedom to defend yourself, the Second Amendment. Both the First and the Second Amendment, they're coming after our freedoms, folks. And, of course, they're placating us with a promise of all this free stuff. That's the whole purpose of the Democrats and the globalists and the socialist state. Now, we got YouTube out here saying they're going to determine what conspiracies are, and they're going to stop recommending videos like that. Now, this was reported a couple of weeks ago by the LA Times, saying that YouTube was tweaking its algorithms to stop recommending certain conspiracy theories. Yeah, okay, sure. They're going to tweak the algorithms to suggest new videos to users to prevent the promotion of conspiracy theories. Things that they identify as conspiracy theories and false information. In other words, information that disagrees with them, with their political agenda, with their government partners. So don't put that out there. Folks, I don't remember who it was that said this recently, but I think it's absolutely true. Real journalism is always whistleblowing. The governments don't want information out there, certain information out there. A good example of this is China. They are criticizing people on or censoring and punishing with fines and jail terms. They're not criticizing. They're punishing critics. You know, they've officially banned Twitter, of course, in the country, and they've got the social media credit scores and things, but Twitter's outright banned. But you got some people who, you know, get on VPNs or whatever, virtual private networks, and they can get around that. And, of course, that's an ongoing electronic warfare with the authoritarian censors in China to try to track those people, find them, punish them. And one of those individuals was a guy named Zhao Weidong, a victim of temporary detention for retweeting a post that criticized Venezuelan President Maduro and China's role in keeping him in power by giving him political support, financial support, so forth. And this is what he wrote that sent him to jail. This is what he wrote on Twitter that sent him to jail. This Chinese man said, "How did Venezuela go from being the richest democracy in the world to a totalitarian socialist state? Well, we have Chinese President Xi Jinping to thank for that, for exporting the evils of communism to the whole world." And so the police found him. They forced him to pay a fine, and they gave him temporary detention. And this was the charge. He shared false information. Well, you know, I don't know that that's false. I mean, certainly, I think that Maduro got the idea from Hugo Chavez and not from Xi Jinping, but he might have read the writings of the guy that Xi Jinping loves so much, you know, Chairman Mao or something, or he might have just gone back to the original BS from Karl Marx. Who knows where he got that information? Nevertheless, it is a totalitarian socialist state, and China is propping them up. But, of course, the Chinese punish him and say, that's fake news. And he said, it's ridiculous. Now, you don't just get fined for criticizing your own government. You can get fined for criticizing a foreign country, too. Well, is that really that much different for American citizens? We've had multiple instances of people being threatened by Twitter. Now, this didn't come from Twitter because Twitter is banned in China. But in the countries where they're allowed to do business, they will supinely lay down for the government, no matter how ridiculous the demands. And we've had Americans who have criticized the Pakistan government and its Sharia law. They have been, in multiple cases, sent a notification from Jack Dorsey and Twitter saying, you have violated these rules. And they cite Pakistan's rules. So Twitter is going to enforce the rules of an authoritarian Sharia state against free speech, against criticism of that government? I mean, China might think about bringing Twitter in. I mean, you know, they're no longer the free speech wing of the free speech party. They're all in line with censorship. They might find that they are a willing partner now of dictators in China, just like they are willing partners of dictators in Pakistan. YouTube, again, YouTube is out there saying, well, we're going to do it by algorithm. They said YouTube has announced, according to NBC News, YouTube has announced that it will no longer recommend videos that come close to violating its community guidelines. That's their phrase, that come close to it. You don't even want to come close to this. It's like with me. They sent me 8,000 emails over a period of about 2.5 months before they finally stopped the spamming. I reported it as spam, but before that, I tried many, many times to go through their reporting process to say, you shut down this broadcast, mid-broadcast, when I was streaming it on YouTube. You shut it down mid-broadcast. I got a single email that said, a complaint has been received. You've been terminated. And I said, I never had a definition of what that complaint was. I don't know what the complaint was. I don't know what I said or what video you took exception to. I was never given a warning. It's supposed to be a three-strike issue. There's supposed to be an appeal process. They have a form there for doing the appeal, but they don't recognize that. They wouldn't give any answers to that. And so now they're saying, well, if it comes close to violating our community guidelines, we are not going to recommend it. If it comes close. Well, they don't even consistently enforce their community guidelines. They have one set of rules for one political group of people and a different one for other people. And then they go on to say, such as conspiracy, or listen to this, medically inaccurate videos. Oh, okay, so we're going to shut down people if they talk about vaccines or you talk about pharmaceutical companies. Because, you know, those that would be a conspiracy theory. No, let me tell you what the conspiracy is. The conspiracy came when the government gave immunity to the vaccine companies in 1986, when they went to the government and said, we've got so many adverse reactions that they're going to put us out of business unless you give us immunity. Okay, we'll do that. Same thing happened with the telecommunications companies in 1996. And they don't want you talking about the health effects, the adverse health effects of 5G either. And they don't want you talking about these foreign wars. As one person said, this is Michael Krieger of Liberty Blitz. He said, no videos of government officials lying the public into wars? Or is that the Silicon Valley approved type of conspiracy? I'm sure we'll have no restrictions whatsoever on all the people with their conspiracy theories about Trump and Russia. That won't be a problem. Those conspiracy theories will be fine. The conspiracy theories from the government about 9/11 that are impossible, those will be allowed as well. But if you question their theories, that will not be allowed. See, that's the whole thing. Going back to Sherlock Holmes again, Arthur Conan Doyle. When we eliminate the impossible, what's left, no matter how improbable, is the truth. Well, you can eliminate a lot of impossible things in the government's official conspiracy theory about 9/11. But they don't want to hear that. They won't allow that. As they pointed out in this article, of course, you had Wesley Clark saying, well, there's a conspiracy theory about all these different countries that we're going to take out one after the other. And we've seen that come true, haven't we? But now, the way this is going to roll out is that Google is broadening the censorship. They'll leave it there, because it draws too much attention if they flat out just take it down. They'll leave it there, but then they'll hide it. And then after it's been hidden for a while, then they will ban it, and then they will ban the person who wrote it. They're going to do it a little bit differently maybe than they've been doing this other stuff. When we look at the way they're rolling this out, say, well, we're going to do it with algorithms. Well, that would be bad enough, wouldn't it? Based on my experience with them, if that really was an algorithm, I think they were just using that as a beard. Because in the middle of January, we had the stories that were leaked to Breitbart saying that they had large teams of people, humans, intervening in the process, saying, we are going to take out any search results for abortion or for Maxine Waters or for David Hogg or any other issue that they want to protect people from being exposed or criticized. They just flush that down with the people, not with AI. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the
year. Welcome back. We were the first ones that they silenced, the first ones that they purged, so that they would have a monopoly on the information that they want to push. And then 2 months later, we saw 800 media outlets of various sizes purged all at once. The one thing that they all had in common, the one thing, was opposition to the surveillance state, the police state, the military-industrial complex, endless wars, that type of thing. We know, and I'd reported in the interim 2 months many, many times, about how this censorship was not ultimately coming from these companies like Google and Facebook, that had basically been put in that position by the people running the military-industrial complex, the people running the surveillance state, the police state. They were the ones who put them in that position, helped to fund them through venture capital and so forth. Talked about that, talked about the Atlantic Council, talked about NATO, talked about the CIA, the NSA, talked about how back in 2017, it had military and surveillance people who had gone to the hearings and said, we are facing an information war, just like Hillary Clinton. We're losing the information war. We've got to silence the cannons in the information war. And we do that by censorship of social media. And that means not just the free press, but that also means your speech, your ability to be able to watch, listen, and share and comment. That's your free speech, the public's free speech. And then we have a free press. They want to get rid of all that stuff because they're losing the information war. And so now they're stepping this up. And it's no surprise that they're coming after Tulsi Gabbard. And she said she's running for president. There's a lot of stuff I'm sure I wouldn't agree with her on. But she is a very effective critic of the endless wars of the military-industrial complex and the neocons push all the time. And so as a result, because she is so effective, I mean, she didn't set this out. She wasn't a chicken hawk like Lindsey Graham or Newt Gingrich or some of these other people criticizing her. She actually went and fought the war and said this is wrong. So she has the moral integrity to oppose this like Smedley Butler did. Said, I fought your wars. I fought these wars, not for the oil companies of the time, not for the high-tech companies of the time, but he fought it for the fruit companies of the time who wanted to go in the banana republics in Central and South America. And so she has the moral authority to stand up like Ron Paul, like Walter Jones, who sadly just passed, like people like Denis Kucinich. And so what they do, they came after her. They painted her as a Russian agent. This is a smear tactic that came out from the establishment media. So I want to play for you a 30-second piece where she comes back after these warmongers in their ivory towers, because she isn't going to be silent when they slander her. Here's what Tulsi Gabbard had to say.
We must stand up. Stand up against powerful politicians from both parties who sit in their ivory towers thinking up new wars to wage, new places for people to die. Wasting trillions of our taxpayer dollars, hundreds of thousands of lives, and undermining our economy and our security and destroying our middle class.
Absolutely right. Good for her. I'm glad she said that. These people in their ivory towers, sitting there dreaming up new places for people to die. Boy, that sums it up, doesn't it? That should be something we repeat over and over again. And again, she said, we have these powerful decision makers who do that. She's not taking that lying down. And so, folks, neither are we. We were the first ones that they came after. They came after her unjustly. But they came after us unjustly as well. If you want to stand with us, if you want to stand for the First Amendment, you want to stand for your free speech, freedom of the press, go to InfoWarsStore.com, folks. That's the way that you support us. We sell to you directly because we got boycotts being put on us by, you know, shadow banning or outright banning of advertising by Google and others, trying to boycott sponsors, trying to keep our ads from showing up places. We have health ads out there. So you can go directly to InfoWarsStore.com. We've got a lot of very effective things. You take control of your health as well as your free speech and do the research. And you can get these products at a deep discount. We've got several specials there right now. We have the Synergy Combo of the Brain Synergy Combo, Brain Force Plus, my favorite supplement that we have. You can get 50% off in combination with Turbo Force, our new product. We also have Ultimate Bone Broth. Yeah, you wouldn't want to take anything that's actually got ancient natural nutrients in it. No, don't take that. Take your pharmaceuticals. See, that's what the other people sell. It's absolutely amazing to me. You know, these trolls out there. Oh, you guys and your snake oil. It's like, you know what? Members of my family have taken pharmaceuticals. It's not snake oil. Those are snake venom. And I talked about the episode my wife had just last week after an operation. But you can get Ultimate Bone Broth. It doesn't have any harmful side effects. It's good for you. It's nutritious. And you can get it 50% off at InfoWarsStore.com. You can support InfoWars. You can support free speech and the freedom of the press. Also, we have some nano silver products that are very effective as antibacterial, antiviral. They have no side effects. They're safe. The Immune Gargle Multipurpose Spray, as well as the Super Silver Wound Dressing, available in a combo at 40% off. Some great savings right now. Take a look at the specials we've got there. And, of course, we've got a lot of products that you'll find at InfoWarsStore.com. Now, one of the corporations that was very eager to shut us down, of course, was Apple. I take a little bit of, as the Germans call it, I don't know how you pronounce it, as Schadenfreude, a dark joy, as I say, and the troubles that Tim Cook is having because, you know, even though he's sitting on this massive pile of cash, because they want to control information and, you know, what they have, and I talked about this a little bit a couple of days ago, things that have happened. I've always had an iPhone. I was there on the very first day. They sold the very first iPhones. I thought it was a great design. I loved the Mac when it came out. I was one of the first people. I was a certified Apple developer for a while. I created a point-of-sale system. I had to write the database myself because nobody had any business software at all for Apple in those days. But it was a great design. Not anymore. These are a bunch of accountants, and political consultants that have replaced the engineers there. A bunch of social justice warriors are running that country right now. Tim Cook is the chief social justice warrior. He's not the CEO. He's the CSJW. That's what he is. And he's the chief social justice warrior of Apple. And they saw their revenues drop 15% in the first quarter. They're, interestingly enough, another 15%. They have 15% market share in the smartphone market. They have now come up with a plan to try to stay solvent. They're going to come up with this Apple News system. As was reported on Drudge Report, the publishers are not too happy about this because Apple is going to allow certain people to come in. You know, they're going to take prestige organizations, you know, like the Washington Post and New York Times that have been busted over and over again for fake news and dirty political tricks. That's the key thing. I mean, you know, Glenn Greenwald was right about Jeff Bezos and Peckergate. It's like he wants to protect his privacy, but he's working to destroy your privacy. But there's another aspect of that. You know, he wants to talk about how he's got this conspiracy theory, but that's allowed. He's got a conspiracy theory that this was done by the National Enquirer. Actually, those pictures were leaked by the brother of his mistress. But he wants to maintain that it's a political dirty trick to him. And yet the Washington, who does more political dirty tricks than anybody else? The Washington Post. This same type of thing they did to Roy Moore, they did to Kavanaugh, and so forth. Getting a little bit of his own medicine there. But it wasn't a political trick coming from the GOP or coming from President Trump. He's basically just projecting what he typically does to other people. So it's not just destroying other people's privacy, but it's the dirty political tricks with dirty pictures. That's Jeff Bezos. Nevertheless, when we look at Apple, I talked about this a couple of days ago, how they have their Sharia app so that men in Saudi Arabia can track their women. And that's okay on the Apple store, but not my program, not anything we do here at InfoWars. That's not okay. And so they're going to have Apple News. They're going to be kind of the Netflix for news. And you can get your Tim Cook government-approved news there. But the news providers, there's a little bit of a hitch there. They're going to pay 50% of this to Apple. Why? Because they're not designing anything. They're just coasting. They don't have designers anymore. They don't have engineers anymore. I mean, the Apple phone has gotten so pathetic. I'm shopping around for something else, and unfortunately, it's going to use the Google platform, but at least I can find some hardware manufacturer somewhere that's not part of that. Or I may just go back to a flip phone and pagers. I'm fed up with this stuff, and I'm fed up with having one phone that's like some kind of a Swiss Army knife, and I'm constantly having to switch applications. I might just have different boxes for different functions. It's starting to look like it makes more sense to me. More private, at least. That's it for the broadcast. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to The Alex Jones Show.